My name's Sean. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you for asking me to speak, Bill. This is, I gotta tell you about the first time I came up here in front of YPG, and I had just gotten out of treatment. And this is where they had the meeting back at First Christian or wherever it was at the old place. And they asked me to read How It Works. And I was like, this is no big deal. I can do this. No problem. You know, I get up there, and they had the podium, I think, was a lot bigger. And I get up there, and I'm reading, and I start shaking, like trembling, because I'm scared to death, you know. And you can't see my legs because it's hidden, you know, but I'm shaking like this. And I had weighed a lot more at the time. My boobs were shaking, and, you know, I was freaking out. And this thing I had read, like, you know, 100 times prior to coming in here, I couldn't do it. And I was mortified, and I went and sat down, and this is the first time I was ever like, God, why would you do that, you know? And because before then, I didn't even believe in God, you know? And so afterwards, I was like, I got to find out what people think about this, because at this point, my ego is hurting, you know? I'm like, did you guys see that? You know, I was shaking up there. And, you know, I asked a couple of my friends, they're like, oh, you look fine, man, no big deal. And my friends were 30 days sober, too. They probably didn't even know I was up here, you know? And then and I asked Esther, she's here, I think, and I was like, Esther, you see me? I got all worked up there. She goes, oh my God, that was hilarious. And I was like, that's it, sponsor, we gotta go now. And you know, I was worried what people thought about me, you know. I came in here scared to death, and I wanted everyone here to like me. And that's why I started drinking, you know. I started drinking because it was cool. I was kind of kidnapped by an older crowd that I wanted to impress. I wanted them to like me. And that's how I developed my superb people-pleasing skills, my nice codependent skills, and all those good things that come with being an alcoholic. And I had all this mastered by the age of 21 before I was able to legally drink. And you know, having said all that, I grew up in Virginia. I'm fortunate enough to have three awesome parents, a younger brother who I love dearly, is my best friend. And, you know, growing up, my parents were fine. I mean, two school teachers, an attorney, which came out to be handy later in life. If you don't have an attorney, Steve in the back, there's your plug, Steve. you know, they're both, you know, both my mother and stepfather, and my father, they're all morally great people. You know, they actually are people of faith, which I wasn't growing up necessarily. You know, and he talks about it being a family disease, and, you know, I single-handedly ruined my family for years. Everyone, my brother, my three friends, my parents and stuff, and, you know, single-handedly I was able to do that. You know, and I realized that coming into sobriety, you know, and finding out it's a family disease, and actually be able to recollect and see what happened, you know, all my past. And, you know, having said that, it was pretty cool because they told me I didn't have to fix my family, even though I destroyed it. You know, all I had to do was work on myself, and they would be okay. And when I say destroyed my family, I mean, I had my parents lying, which is something they wouldn't do. They would manipulate each other, you know, in one divorce. And the second one, I was actually in the making. They told me. You know, they were on the rocks, because one's defending me and sacrificing their love for each other for this person who was so sick. You know, and the cool thing is all I had to do was come in Alcoholics Anonymous and step away from that and cling on to something bigger, which is you guys and God. And I single-handedly can step out of that, and they can, you know, God can take care of their lives. I'm not blocking them as well, which is pretty cool. You know, having said that, you hear people say, I felt different growing up. I had a pretty glamorous life, I think, but regardless of how good things were, honestly, I never felt complete inside, whole. You know, I always felt that something was different, you know, and I only have 15 minutes here, but I can tell you, you know, certain periods of my life that, you know, I felt like I wasn't doing what the normal people were doing. You know, I started playing soccer at an early age, and it became a passion in my life, and it became my identity, and I got to do a lot of cool things with it. And you know, having said that, it took up a lot of my time. When I went to college, I wasn't a normal college student. I was training two-a-days doing this stuff, and I wanted that normal college life that I saw. And what's normal college life? I have no idea. You know, I didn't know what I wanted. I just didn't know. I didn't feel right, you know. And, you know, I was traveling, which was cool. I got to go, you know, play through Europe and do extravagant things. But it doesn't matter what you do if you're not whole inside, you know, and I never knew that. I kept looking for something different. In college, I wanted to say, well, you know, people get out, they work a 9-to-5. You know, that's cool. I want to do that. You know, and eventually that happens. And, you know, still, I'm working that 9-to-5. It's something that I wanted to do. And I didn't feel right doing it, you know. And at that point, soccer was gone in my life. I had some injuries, and it's pretty bad when you have something you're so passionate about, and it's taken away. You know, there's another void that's gone. You know, that, and I was already missing one to begin with. You know, so boozing was a good option for me, morning and night. That's all I knew how to do, and I was okay with it. You hear people talk about their goals dropping, their standards, their morals. You know, that's what happened. I had no idea it was even happening. You know, playing soccer a lot, I became very transient. 7 colleges, never finished. You know, it's okay. It's what happened. But I was all over the place like a gypsy, you know. And not that I was running from anything. It's just that, you know, what my point is, I would meet so many people, but I would have no friends. You know, it was perfect for me going from one place to another, you know. Not that I would take your money, but I would take your friendship. You get close to me, and guess what? I'd leave, and I wouldn't care. I'd go to the next place and next place. You know, it became very damaging, you know, especially coming down having to do step work. You're like, holy cow. You know, thank God I have you guys. Now, this is the only time I've ever had friends in my life. I can honestly say that. And I've been so many places. I'm a pretty fun-loving guy, you know, but honestly, I couldn't do it, you know, until I come in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I became a drink. I became very lonely. I came across this job as a flight attendant, and most people think this is a pretty cool job. You know, you've got girls, you travel the world, nice hotels. Who wouldn't love that job? Well, you know, what I would do is I would get off a plane and I would go sit in a hotel room with 4 walls and drink. That's it. When most people would take the bus to go to the Metro Zoo in D.C., I'm not going to do that. They stopped selling alcohol there 2 weeks ago. You know why? Because I researched it. You know? Forget that. I'm not going to do that. And I would stay at home. In the San Diego Zoo? No. And, you know, I'd end up in some El Salvadorian bar getting in a fight. You know, that's what happened. I missed out on stuff because of my drinking. You know, I couldn't help it. That's what I did. And I can't tell you how lonely and miserable it was. And I mention this because this is really leading up to my bottom. I only have 15 minutes, and I think that's important because it was an emotional bottom. I've had legal consequences. I've had social consequences. I've been arrested for drunk in public, 1 DUI, and a 3rd wreck, which I'll lead up to in a second. And none of those had any influence. In all honesty, I had to be, you know, mentally shot, you know, so to say. And, you know, there came to a point where my drinking was, I would drink in this room, and I would go, I don't know why I did this. I'm such a sissy. I was going from the mirror for some reason. I guess I got to rent a place to walk around the hotel room, and I would put my arms on the counter in the bathroom, and I'd cry. And, like, after a crying, I'd just be like, boosh, just down it. You know, and I'd shy away from it. And it talks about in the big book, I think it's To the Family, and it mentions talking about the alcoholic wanting to want to stop. And I read that one time in a step study, and it made such big sense. Here it is. That was me wanting to want to stop. And I don't know if it makes sense to you, but it's something that rings home for me. And that went on for a very, very long time. It was me, a bag, my clothes, and a bottle. And eventually I was able to come across a consequence which would bring me into not only Alcoholics Anonymous, but treatment. On December 26th of 2007, and this is good too because the entire family is in town for Christmas when this happens. The day after Christmas, I'm drinking in the morning and I black out my driving. And mind you, this is just after getting my license back from the first DUI, so I'm learning quickly. So I go drink and drive, all right? And I black out and I hit 5 cars. I injure 5 people. And I'm arrested at that moment. I don't like talking about this, but this is the worst and best thing that's ever happened to me. I can tell people it's the best thing that ever happened to me, and it blows a normal person's mind. People in Alcoholics Anonymous are like, that's cool. It's amazing. I brought you here. And that's pretty cool to be able to go in Alcoholics Anonymous and say, I lost my wife, my family left me, you know, I'm losing my job, and I hate myself. And you're like, that's awesome. Freaking welcome, man. That is great, you know. And God did this for me, you know. I remember that day clearly as can be. I had urinated on myself when I was in a blackout. I had blood all over me. And my family were the first people to show up. And I remember coming out of this, and I remember seeing my father, who's like a 300-pound, 6-foot-5 man, I don't know where I came from, but and I remember seeing him like he was the only person like there. Like, you know, you would see the sports pictures with this athlete and the rest is just a crowd. And I'll never forget it. You know, it was just my father. And here I am in handcuffs with urine all over me. And, you know, pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, yes. Anyway, it was the holidays. I was trying to get into treatment. And everything's closed. You know, it's Christmas time, so no one's picking up the phone calls. I'm like, this is great. My parents are freaking out. He wants help, and no one's here to help him. You know, we got to hurry up and get this before he changes his mind. And eventually, I met him in Turning Point of Tampa. The cool thing about this was they introduced Step 1 in Alcoholics Anonymous, and they say, listen, your life's unmanageable, and you're powerless over alcohol. I can vouch for that. And you know, in fact, I could vouch for it a long time ago, too. But when I come into treatment deflated with the emotional bottom, the deal is I'm ready to do something about it. That's the difference. And they told me it was a disease. That's fine. I'll take it. Whatever I have to do to get rid of this or, you know, get well. And they told me that I had to find a higher power greater than myself. And there's a gentleman that always introduces himself, and he says, I thank God for AA, and I thank AA for God. I love that. I won't steal it, but I love that line because it makes true to me. Before coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't hate God. I just didn't really care, I'll be honest with you. And now it's the best thing that ever happened to me. You know, I got a sponsor, and I didn't know how to pray. They told me just to say, help me in the morning and thank you at night. And that's how it started. You know, it was strange at first because I'll never forget being in treatment. I couldn't talk. And Greg's here. Thank God you're here, Greg, because I haven't seen you in a while. And I called him when I was trying to get these phone numbers. He's like, how you doing? I was like, not good. I can't talk. And I physically could not talk. And it was the first time in my life I was scared to death. Here I used to be this charismatic person, I think, going out doing tons of cool stuff. And now I really cannot hold a conversation. And it's true. I was scared to death. I was thinking, what had happened to me? You know, and it was the first time in my life that I was too scared to drink. You know, and that's the best thing. That's the best feeling in the world. You know, being too scared to drink, and I was willing and open to it being a disease and finding the higher power at that moment. So I did these things like praying, and honestly, I had a pretty hokey experience. I think I made it up. I don't know, but I was in treatment, and I went somewhere on a Sunday to find God, like He's the one that's lost. You know, and I come back and I'm feeling good. You know, and I found out I have a warrant for my arrest, you know, in treatment. And I'm like, this is great. You know, I'm trying to do the right thing, and you got me to have a warrant now? And the guy I was talking with, he's still one of my best friends today and still sober. He said, listen, you need to go in your room and pray. Well, I did. And I felt a sense of peace, you know, at that moment. And it sounds hokey as hell, and maybe I made it up. I mean, a cereal box could have fell off the counter, and I would have been like, that's God, I'm in, you know, because I was desperate, you know. And I don't know if it was a higher power moment at that point. All I know is that I had a sense of peace, and it was not normal for me at that point. I was in treatment. My life was in shambles. I was losing my job. There's legal stuff everywhere. For me to be calm at that moment was not normal. I knew that. And from then on, I honestly can say I not necessarily had felt the faith in AA or God at that moment, but I was curious. That's what they say. Keep coming back, you know. And I don't think a lot of us coming in here, you know, believe in this right away, you know, but the whole God thing and putting trust into, you know, my sponsor or anything else like that. But then, honestly, all I have to do is keep coming back. And something takes over. In my life, it's God. AA. He works through you guys. It's pretty cool. I can implement my program throughout my day. You know, it is the best thing about it. Going into work when I'm scared, when I'm in fear, I know I have God with me. You know, sometimes it's tough. Sometimes I can defeat myself. I get in the way. I know that. But I can always use this program to get back to it. And that's the beauty of it, you know. I had a leadership program come in today to work, and I'll be real quick. And what they would do is they would tell me, they interviewed me 10 questions. They said, what's your goal for today? I'm laughing. I'm like, not to drink, you know. I didn't say that, but, you know, they're like, do you have a mentor? And I was like, yeah. She's like, what? You have a mentor? You know, she's thinking, life coach, what I do? I was like, yeah, I talk to them all the time, meet with them once a week. She had no idea it was AA. And what she was doing, she was preaching this leadership program that normal people would use, but it's like what we have. But they don't have God there. So they're doing it all on their own, and I don't have to do that. I have you guys and God. But thank you for letting me speak, Bill, and I love AA. Thank you.